Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. For those kids whose parents cannot take care of them, care by close relatives is an increasingly popular alternative to foster care. It's not free, but proponents say it's more cost-effective than foster care. Still, Governor Kasich's proposed budget ends state funding for the state's kinship care program. It's called Ohio's Kinship Permanency Incentive Program. Other states have done the same thing. Ohio's not alone in this. Later on in the program, we'll hear from folks who have benefited from kinship care funding and those who help manage the programs on the ground in Ohio. Right now, we're lucky to have Michael Colbert. He's Ohio's Director of Job and Family Services. He's joining us to explain the proposed cuts. Welcome to the show, Michael Colbert.
Well, thank you, and thanks for having us. How you doing?
Very well, thank you. Can you tell me what the cost-benefit analysis is of cutting something like Ohio's Kinship Permanency Incentive Program?
Well, it just comes down to us not having enough GRF to fund all of these programs. This is a great program. And, you know, when you look at the level of cuts that we've had to sustain in the state budget on the state side, we looked at where we could get the most bang for the buck. So what are those programs that are going to allow for the health and the safety and the welfare of the child? And we decided to put the dollars with cash assistance child only. Now, what cash assistance child only does is it actually provides for a subsidy to actually take care of the child. It is roughly around $259 a month versus kinship incentive, which is $2,000 for 3 years. So, you know, clearly we liked the kinship program. We thought it was a great program. Our emphasis of placement and putting children with the kin is still there. We're still supportive of that. But this incentive was an incentive for permanent placement.
Right.
It was not designed to actually be a subsidy to take care of the children. So we put the dollars where we needed to take care of the children. And that is in cash assistance child-only subsidy.
Tell me what cash assistance child-only subsidy, what exactly does it do? Who gets that money?
That's great. Cash assistance child-only subsidy is a subsidy that is designed to actually go to the family. So in the case of a kinship, and keep in mind, the theory of kinship will continue to go on. We've got relatives that want to take care of their children, and when that placement happens, they can either apply for cash assistance family because they're in an income bracket that allows them to get a monthly cash payment to take care of the family, or if the kin are at a higher level of income but the children are not, they can go for cash assistance child only, which, again, would give roughly about a $200 a month cash assistance check, along with other benefits, food assistance, Medicaid, and other benefits to actually support the child.
Right now, the one of the eligibility requirements is that the family, the relatives, their income be not more than 300% of the federal poverty level.
That's
and
right.
So in a way, what you're saying is, and if they're willing to take on this charge and they're beyond that 300% level, they're willing to do it for nothing, right? So
well,
if they're willing to do it for nothing, and you're saying, but if they could, even at that level, beyond 300% of the poverty level, still apply for the cash assistance child-only benefit, isn't that going to end up costing the state more, or couldn't it?
No, actually it doesn't, because when the kin, it's actually a better incentive. And this is why when we looked at our limited resources, it actually saves the state dollars because it provides an incentive for that kin, that family environment, those people that they know to take on these children. They're still incurring a cost, and they're going out of their way and saying, hey, if we could just get some help from the state, we would do this. Now, just because you were on the kinship program doesn't mean you still wouldn't qualify for the cash assistance. We're just taking the incentive portion out of it.
Well, but there's a cut. I mean, something's getting cut, $5 million.
Exactly. But we needed that $5 million to maintain the subsidy. And also keep in mind that the subsidy, the child-only and the cash assistance family subsidy, the cash assistance, is not just related to kinship. We need all of the state dollars that we can gather up in the pool to match as many of the TANF dollars as we can to bring down more money for cash assistance.
And kinship,
so this is not just costing the state. It is a state and federal program.
Right, and kinship isn't? The kinship permanency incentive program doesn't draw down those dollars?
The kinship permanency program is a state funds only program. Now, we can use the kinship
the TANF money.
We can use it for match, but it is a state, it is 100% state funded.
Okay, but it can be used to match those federal dollars.
It could be. We could use that. But currently, as it existed, it is a state fund only program.
So you're not concerned then that the 8,000 or roughly 8,000 kids who are receiving the kinship care funding, or the families that they're with are receiving the kinship care funding, you're not concerned that they'll drop off those roles, that they won't be able to afford to continue offering this care to their relatives?
Not at all, because this is not where they're getting the care. Think about it. This program is $500 up front, $300 every 6 months, $2,000 over 3 years.
Total.
Mm-hmm. Okay? Where they're really going to get the care from is cash assistance child only. That's $200 a month. And if it's more than one sibling, it's even a higher amount. So is it a great program? Does it incentivize kin to take on legal custody, court-ordered custody? Yes, but it is just that. It is an incentive. We have to put the dollars where the child is going to be taken care of. Where do we put our dollars? Do we put the dollars to take care of the child in a monthly way, or do we put the dollars in an incentive program? And we had limited dollars, so we put it in the care of the children.
How many people in the families or caregivers participating in the kinship care program, permanency incentive program, also participate in the cash assistance child only benefit?
I'd have to run that data, and I can get that for you.
Okay. So you're not sure what, like even a rough guess about how many of them are already benefiting from both programs?
I'd have to do a cross check to see how many children are in the kinship program that are also eligible for cash assistance child only.
What is your judgment on the impact of the kinship permanency incentive program since it was established, I think, in 2005?
I think it's a great program. I think when you look at kinship and when you look at what is being done with differential response, and when you look at the overall child welfare system, there is a movement now to place children with families. And there's also a decreasing overall children being taken out of families or children being taken out of home.
Right.
The whole emphasis in child welfare now is keeping children in the home, putting resources around other support mechanisms that keep the family together.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's great. I think it's a great program, but you have to understand we just have limited resources now. So when we go to limited resources, what do? We protect families, we protect children, and we protect those mechanisms around them, food, cash assistance, child care. We protect all the mechanisms around them. So the dollar starts to go with the individuals, and that's why we protected the subsidy.
Did you see an increase in kinship care participation with the incentive program?
We have not lined up the increase in, or decrease in the kinship program, meaning more kin taking on their relatives, and the level of funding aligned to the kinship program, whether it would, back in the day it was in TANF, or you start fast-forwarding to last budget when it was in state revenue. We have not lined that up, and that's something that we are looking at.
So if it was, do you, so you're not sure if it actually was an incentive or not then? I mean, in other words, is there a judgment on that level that it did incentivize people to do this and that by eliminating the program it might have the opposite effect?
No, we do believe that it was an incentive. And the reason we believe it's an incentive is because any time that people take on their kin or that you know, you've got an uncle that takes on a child or a grandmother or grandfather take on a child, they're going to need some level of subsidy to assist them and to make this a permanent move. It's just common sense. You've got more and more families that are taking on their kin, and by keeping children with their kin, it fosters a better environment. So we don't really need to run a lot of data to see that. But again, this was not the subsidy, it was the incentive. And the incentive here was for permanent placement, court-ordered placement.
Tell us about the cuts to the adoption assistance program.
Adoption assistance program?
Yes.
Adoption assistance is a program that we funded at $250 per child, per case, per month. Our current rate now is $230 under the new proposed budget. So right now it's at $250. The proposed budget for 12 and 13 will be $230. We lowered the case because, again, we have depleting state revenues.
Right.
It does have a federal match. So by lowering the case, the total impact with the federal match on the county level is $7. It's not the full $20 per case. That would just be state only also.
Mm-hmm. And what is that program used for?
It's used for adoption assistance. It's used for state adoption. The line also has our protective services, where we have nearly 23,000 children a year in investigations and assessments. We have 74,000 allegations of child abuse. That entire line funds a large amount of our foster care, adoption, and child welfare.
You know, the long-term benefits of funding these kinds of programs, what's your assessment of those? They say that 3 of 10 of the nation's homeless are former foster children. A recent study found that 12 to 18 months after leaving foster care, almost a third of the males and 10% of females have been incarcerated, 33% receiving public assistance. How important are these kind of programs in the long term?
These programs are excellent because when you look at our budget, one, we protect those 23,000 foster care services that I talked about. We also protect our abused and neglected children. So all of the children are protected, and these programs are critical to doing that. But what we did is, in order to maintain the budget, we had to do some level of cutting to the adoption assistance. We're still paying $230 per case per child. I mean, that's still a good amount. And when you equivalent the cut to the local level, when you add in the federal match, it's still only $7. So what I would say to you is these programs are doing a great job. We're maximizing our federal dollars, and we are protecting children in the best way we can. Are we doing some level of cost sharing with our locals? Sure, we had to do that because we had limited resources. But we tried to minimize the impact as much as possible.
So where do you think the impact's going to be?
I believe the impact will be twofold. For new cases that go on, you'll probably have counties up there per cost per case. And that because of the difference, it'll go up probably by $7. I don't believe that $7 will be a critical difference in an adoption case. And when you talk about the current cases, the counties probably will not be able to renegotiate them, so they will probably have some level of cost that they will have to share at the local level with their levy dollars.
What about for children? I mean, you don't see any outcome differences in the long run?
Not for children, because we have protected children. We have put the dollars with the children. So let's talk about those overall safety net services for children. Food stamps. Food stamps administrative costs that we need to administer the food stamps program is protected. Let's look at child welfare. Those cases and those assessments and investigations that we talked about and the kids that are in foster care, they're protected in this budget. You look at the child-only subsidy, that's protected, held harmless. Everything involving children, child care, no child that is currently on subsidized child care will have to leave the program. Our budget protects children.
But it does limit how many people can enter that program now, doesn't it?
It does do that, but that, you know, that intake amount could be at any level. So we had to look at child care in two ways, because when you think of child care, think of the fact that we had $70 million in stimulus last time, and we had an additional $50 million in TANF. So we had $120 million in less resources. And with $120 million less in resources, we were still able to maintain all the children that were on the program now. I mean, that's phenomenal that we were able to do that.
So if you had an extra $5 million, would you not put it back into the kinship permanency incentive program? If the children aren't going to be impacted at all, why do it anyways?
Because the $5 million that we had before, and I'll just take you back just to our overall state piece, the Job and Family Services, non-Medicaid, state money is $150 million less than it was last year.
Mm-hmm.
So if we had $5 million, an extra $5 million, would we look at permanency as a viable program? Sure. But we would probably also look at where can we match those dollars. Are we maintaining enough match in TANF? Are we maintaining enough match in cash assistance, depending on how the caseloads go, to make sure that we have enough subsidy going out to take care of the children?
Okay. Michael Colbert, Director of Ohio Department of Job and Family Services, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much.
Really appreciate it. We're going to have to take a quick break. When we return, Crystal Ward Allen of the Public Children's Services Association of Ohio will be with us, so stay tuned. This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News.
This is 89.7 NPR News, and at 1 o'clock On Point begins with a discussion of how the quake and its trauma may reshape Japan in the future. That discussion at 1 on Point.
Support for 89.7 comes from Ohio State's Comprehensive Cancer Center and James Cancer Hospital, rated exceptional by the National Cancer Institute. More information at cancer.osu.edu.
It's 31 degrees currently in downtown Columbus, a chance of a little snow today, then gradually becoming mostly sunny and a high of 40 degrees. Clear skies tonight and cold, a low of 23. Sunshine for Friday and a high of 41, mostly cloudy Friday night and a low of 25. Looking ahead to Saturday, mostly cloudy skies and a high of 43, and there is a chance of snow Saturday night. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're talking about the cuts to Ohio's Kinship Permanency Incentive Program. Joining us right now is Crystal Ward Allen. She is the Executive Director of Public Children's Services Association of Ohio. Welcome to the show, Crystal.
Thank you for having me.
Also with us by phone from her home in Central Ohio is Martha Renda. Martha and her husband, Guy, have legal custody of three grandchildren. Their ages 4, 5, and 7. What a handful, Martha. For the past 3 years, they are not currently receiving Kinship Permanency Incentive Program benefits, but received the benefits for about 2 years. Martha, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
First of all, Crystal, could you explain what the incentives are and kind of the history of how they came about in the first place?
Sure. In child welfare, we really work very hard to keep children safe. The first goal is to maintain them in their own home. If we can't do that and we try and apply a lot of safety services, then we look for a safe, familiar face for them, usually a relative, often a grandmother like Renda that you have on the call. But certainly we have a lot of research that shows that kids do better in safe, familiar, often relative homes than they do in foster care. And these are kids that are at risk of safety and actually need an out-of-home placement. They've been abused. They've been neglected. They've been have experienced very traumatic incidents in their lives. So when we get kids into care, we look for that relative or kinship caregiver. And if we have them in foster care, we're looking to move them out of foster care into a permanent home. So the Kinship Permanency Incentive Program is all about a permanent family for the child. If we need to move a child out of the home, we're looking for that family. If the family cannot restore their home to a safe, nurturing home for their own child, then we're looking for a permanent family. That's where the Kinship Permanency Incentive Program came from. It's to try and incent kinship caregivers to take legal custody or guardianship of the child and get them out of the system. This really supports a lot of what the Governor Kasich administration has been promoting, which is a redesign of government, less government intervention, and trying to do things cost-effectively in a different way.
Martha Renda, it was the maximum kinship incentive amount is a little over $2,000 per child. Is that really going to make or break you as a provider? Would you have not done it if you hadn't received that extra $6,000 for all three kids?
Well, first of all, we didn't know anything about it until after we received custody of the kids. So normally you don't find out about it until after you've been approved and you have custody. And then they come into your house and do an assessment and let you know that this money is available and that you can apply for it. So the money had nothing to do with whether you take the children or not, but the tremendous help that this provides for you in order to set up your household for three children that you did not know you were going to be raising. Mm-hmm. You know, it provides you with beds and mattresses, car seats, high chairs, things that you normally, once your children are grown and gone, you don't have. Your house is not set up to raise little children, infants and toddlers. So this money is a tremendous help to us grandparents out there. And there is over 86,000 children being raised in Ohio by grandparents. So it's a large amount out there that need this help and this support to get these kids established in their home.
Tell us a little bit about your story, Martha, you know, how you came to take care of your grandkids this way, and you know, maybe a little bit about the time frame. How quickly did it happen? How fast were you expected to react to the circumstances?
Well, we received a call when the children were already in foster care from my stepson, my husband's son, asking us if we would try to get them in our home as soon as possible. They were in foster care for about 2 weeks. It took us that long to get through the process, the background check, fingerprints, and all that. Once we received two of the children. One was 8 months old, one was 3 months old, or 3 years old. And we had them for about 8.5 months. And they were involved in drugs and alcohol abuse. The parents, the children were involved as well, had been exposed to it. And we had them for 8.5 months. In the meantime, they had another child, okay? The children were then placed back in the home after 8.5 months for about 3 months. Okay, and then all three of them were pulled out again. At that time, the youngest one was 8 months. So we knew at that time, you know, things were not going to change. And the youngest one had a lot of medical problems because throughout the pregnancy, he had been exposed when she was pregnant with him. So we knew when they came back to us the second time that we had to make a decision. At the time, we were both working full time. So when we had the two younger ones, we paid for childcare. And when we received them again, the three of them, we knew at that time we had to make a decision. And it was either to try and pay for childcare and continue working, or I was going to have to quit my job and we were going to have to commit our life to raising these children, because we didn't want them in foster care, and we knew that after a certain period of time, they would be put up for adoption because they can only hold the children in the system for so long. So we made that decision that, yes, we would go ahead and go for custody, and I quit my job, and we rely on my husband's income, and thank God for that. But this is how we decided we would, you know, raise these children and devote our life to them. Once we received custody, it was about 2 years before we actually got legal custody. You go through all the procedures, and the parents have a chance. And then when it gets close to the two-year mark, I believe that's when, you know, Children's Services, you know, decides there needs to be some type of decision made. So we went ahead and we got legal custody, and then after that, then they come to your home and do assessments and stuff, and then they let you know about the funds available. We did not seek them out, nor did we know anything about them, but we were just overwhelmed that we would be able to get this type of help to get these kids established in our home.
Crystal Ward Allen, what, you know, when I was talking to Michael Colbert, director of the Ohio Department of Job and Family Services, I asked him if he said the kids are all going to be all right. Everyone's going to be okay. Then I asked him, well, then, do you need the $5 million? Do you need this program? And I'm going to ask you that. Is the program necessary if he says everyone's going to be okay?
The program is necessary. We very much depend on that TANF child-only cash assistance he talked about, mm-hmm. and all the other safety net supports for families and children. But I have to tell you, there's 66,621 assistance groups that are receiving child-only cash assistance. Some of them are sibling groups, so it's more children.
Throughout the state?
Right. We also know that, as Rinda said, the census started counting grandparents raising grandchildren. That's over 91,000 families right now, and that doesn't count aunts and uncles and other relative caregivers. The Kinship Permanency Incentive Program is about finding a permanent family for those children. And at the end of 2009, it was serving 8,000 kids. This is a target population of kids that need a permanent family. When we just talked to the grandmother, and thank you for caring for your kids, she's right. These kids had been in foster care, which our average cost is way over $700 per month per child. So they would be in foster care otherwise. And if they're lucky enough to get a permanent adoptive home, our average adoption subsidy is well over $465 per month. So the Kinship Permanency Incentive Program is really critical for permanent homes. It's not just about safety. It's about permanency. And that's kind of a really key concept for children to grow up and be successful and to succeed in school, succeed in the workforce when they got out of school, to avoid homelessness, to avoid incarceration. We know that kids who grow up in foster care have really difficult outcomes, and they're not good. We're looking for permanent families. But this is a target population of very high-need children.
Tell us a little bit about the folks who participate in the kinship care. Martha Renda on the phone right now with us. As a grandparent, is that typical? What's the typical demographic? What are we looking at?
Well, the typical demographic is about a little less than half of the caregivers on the Kinship Permanency Incentive Program. First of all, they have all been to court. A court has reviewed significant information about their family, just as Ms. Renda discussed, and has awarded judicial custody. That's a very big process in court. That's very different from the 66,000 families that are on child-only cash assistance.
Okay.
About half of them are grandparents. About another 15% are aunts and uncles. The rest of them, which is about 30%, are older siblings, their cousins, their close friends of the family. We call them fictive kin. They could even have been foster parents that agreed to take custody of the children so that they're no longer foster kids. Kids who are in foster care are highly regulated. The caregivers are highly regulated. And it's a very temporary, transitional, and indefinite time for them. We're looking for permanent families.
When you're in a kinship situation, Martha, they're just like your children. They can go to the swimming pool, and they can do sorts of things that ordinary kids can do.
Right. They are. They're your kids. I mean, you are devoting your life to raising them for 18 years. My husband's almost 60. And we went from a two-family, two-car, two-job family down to one raising children again, like your young people, only without all the resources and all the help. You know,
no one had a baby shower for you.
Right. And it was like having triplets. Okay. You get three children at once, all different ages, and they all have special needs and different things. Mm-hmm. So we also get the Ohio Works Child Only Grant. And let me tell you, for three children, it's $434 a month. And that's what we get. Because my husband works and we don't qualify for anything else, which I'm blessed that we don't. But that Ohio Works First Only money helps us so much. We pay for preschool for two of them because of their special needs. We were told that they need to be in preschool to keep their skills up because they were so developmentally behind. So these cuts that are being made, they're reaching out and touching all these older people that normally don't get any kind of assistance or any kind of help. Mm-hmm. Because they've always worked and all that, but it is tremendously affecting our family, I know, with these cuts that are proposed.
You know, I just want to say the Rendas are really have a lot of characteristics in common with many of the families on the program. I mean, we know that over half of the families are still in the workforce, but they're low-income families, and I don't know that their income is low. But
when you go down to one income earner.
Correct. You go down to one income earner, you have child care costs, you do not qualify for those other benefits, yet you have a whole new group of kids with significant fiscal as well as other types of needs to deal with.
Martha, Renda, would you do it all over again?
Oh, yeah, in a minute. I wouldn't even think about it. Yes, absolutely. These kids are our life, and we are going to make sure that they break that cycle and that they succeed. We will make sure of that.
They are very fortunate kids.
Well,
thank you
for joining us today, Martha Renda.
Thank you.
Martha Renda is with her husband, Guy, has legal custody of three grandchildren, ages 4, 5, and 7, for the past 3 years, and they have permanent custody. Thanks again, Martha.
Thank you. We have to take
another quick break. When we return, we will be joined by an administrator who's on the ground running with one of these programs and administers the funds at the local level. So stay with us. We'll be right back. This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News.
There are many ways to get the latest local news. Follow WOSU News on Twitter or find WOSU on Facebook. Get headlines delivered to your email by subscribing to our daily news loop e-newsletter at wosu.org/email.
This is 89.7 NPR News, and in 20 minutes at 11 o'clock, Hour 2 of All Sides begins, and we'll hear about the ways urban adolescent African-American girls experience the world and will listen to their stories of trauma and resiliency with the Rise Sister Rise Project. That discussion begins at 11 o'clock.
Support for 89.7 comes from the state auto insurance companies providing home, automobile, and business insurance products and services to Central Ohioans since 1921. State Auto is on the web at stateauto.com.
and it's 31 degrees in downtown Columbus, gradually becoming mostly sunny today and a high of 40 degrees. Clear skies tonight, a low of 23. Sunshine for Friday and a high of 41. Cloudy skies Friday night and a low of 25 degrees. Looking ahead to Saturday, mostly cloudy and a high of 43. On your drive home, catch up on the day's events with All Things Considered. Join NPR's Robert Siegel, Michelle Norris, and Melissa Block, along with 89.7's Marilyn Smith, for all the day's news on All Things Considered. It begins this afternoon at 4 on 89.7 NPR News. And All Sides continues.
Welcome back to All Sides. Crystal Ward Allen of the Public Children's Services Association of Ohio is still with us. Thanks for staying with us, Crystal.
Mm-hmm.
And joining us now, Catherine Whittington. Catherine is the service coordinator. Well, she's the coordinator for Ashtabula County Community Service. She works with the county's Kinship Navigator program. And we welcome you to the show, Catherine.
Well, thank you for having me.
Does every program have a different name for theirs? Is it the Navigator program in every county?
I don't believe so. I think each county has their own title to their kinship program.
Okay.
We all have navigators that do have the program in place. We are fortunate. We have not only a navigator, but we also have a kinship coordinator.
Tell us, but before we move on, I just want to let our listeners know we welcome your questions now. Crystal Ward Allen of the Public Children's Services Association of Ohio is with us, and Catherine Whittington of the Ashtabula County Community Service is with us. If you have a question or comment for them, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We're talking about the state's Kinship Permanency Incentive Program, which will be eliminated and which would be eliminated if the budget is passed as proposed by Governor Kasich. Catherine, tell us, what do you do?
Well, I'm the Community Service Coordinator for Ashtabula County Children's Services. We currently have a Kinship Navigator Program, and we have a Kinship Coordinator and a Navigator also that works part-time. What I do is I promote the program. I promote the services that are offered, the Kinship Permanency Incentive Program, along with also what we do here with our Kinship Support Group. We have book bags and school supplies available to those families as well. So basically, I'm in the community looking for the families that are in need of services that have taken in children that, you know, they're now kinship caregivers.
Tell us about some of the circumstances you've come across that suggest that the Kinship Permanency Incentive Program is necessary.
It's necessary because a lot of our families that we are dealing with are retired grandparents that are living on fixed incomes. So when they're taking in these children, they don't know about these programs. So when they're taking these children in, they're doing it because they love these children, and they know it's best for them to be with family and not in the foster care system, and that they will thrive in their home. So they take them in not even knowing that there's funds available. These funds help these families ease some financial issues, such as clothing, getting beds, dressers. You know, these families weren't prepared to take on children. You know, they've raised their children. So their home was not designed at this point with, you know, car seats, bouncies, cribs, any of those types of things, let alone if there's special needs and there's possibly assessments that are needed for the children. You know, these are things that this Kinship Permanency Incentive Funds help pay for these families.
You know, Crystal and Catherine, the more I hear about the program, the more I think, is incentive really the right word? Isn't it more of a success? It's a way to achieve a greater level of success with the families who have taken on these burdens?
Well, I do think that it is something that is a recognition of the success that they have accepted legal custody or guardianship, which is a permanent status for those kids,
mm-hmm.
and that they maintain it. We see that when kids have been in the custody of the Child Welfare Agency, and that means significant things have gone on for these children. They've been traumatized. When they arrive, a lot of grandparents gladly, and other relatives, gladly do say, I'm here for a transitional period. And that's why we have 66,000 families that are just on the TANF child-only rolls. But in order for them to accept custody and for it to be a sustainable family for that child who's been traumatized, they do need some extra help. And it is a recognition of their success and helping them to make that successful permanent transition. And I just can't emphasize that enough. This is about permanency, just as adoption is about permanency.
Catherine, what sort of impact? We talked with Michael Colbert, director of the Ohio Department of Job and Family Services, at the top of the hour. And he said that even though they're cutting all of this money, even though they're basically eliminating the Kinship Permanency Incentive Program, the kids won't suffer. There won't be any ramifications for the children. Do you agree, or what's your assessment of that?
Well, we currently have 357 families here in Ashtabula County that are in our kinship program. Out of those families, we have 92 families who are currently receiving the Kinship Permanency Incentive. And out of the 92 families, we're serving 178 through the KPI. So we have 178 children that will be impacted. And it's more of an impact. You know, these children have this chance at permanency with these families. And that money helps the families be more successful. In providing book bags, school supplies, Christmas, birthdays, beds, dressers, you know, these funds, it's not a lot. I mean, we're talking about $2,500 that a family would receive for one child.
Over
almost 3 years. It's a 2.5 to 3 year, you know, with the paperwork.
Let me ask the harsh question. Why should the rest of us care? What's the benefit, the larger benefit to society, if the Kinship Permanency Incentive Program is maintained at some level?
You know, I think that this is important to do just a little bit of cost analysis here, because we're talking about the budget, and therefore we're talking about everyone's tax dollars. I want you to know that when kids go into the adoption program, for three kids like Miss Renda had, that would cost an average of nearly $2,000 per month. That's what the cost would be.
Somebody else had adopted them.
Right.
Okay.
And those our adoptions are very, you know, we love adoptive families. And we invest in adoptive families. We invest significant dollars in adoptive families. But if you look at this compared to the kinship permanency, which is $625 per child for a whole year, that's just a little over $50 per child per month, versus, so it would be $150 per child for those three kids.
But they're also getting the cash assistance child only.
That's true. So we'd add it up to 434, so now we're up to a little under $600 per month for three children versus $2,000 per month for the same three children in an adoptive family. And I have to tell you, for the adoption, that's through age 18. The kinship permanency is only a transitional period to really help those families get those children integrated into the family, a permanent part of the family. As you know, the woman, the great-grandmother we just talked to, they already exhausted their benefits. They are the success story to say, we took the kids, we got them settled and integrated into the family, we got the beds they needed, and we have a permanent loving commitment to these children forever. And we know from research the outcomes are better for kids in kinship families than they are in foster care. And, I mean, they're better. They succeed in school. Their academic attendance is better. They get in fewer unruly problems in the community.
It hasn't been around long enough to see any kind of long-term ramifications, has it?
No, it hasn't. But I do want to say, just as we are looking currently right now, Ohio and every state in the nation is really looking at redesigning government, all sorts of redesigns. And you see it in this current administration to say, we're going to do jobs differently. We're going to do supporting of our public employees differently. We're going to revisit our state retirement plans differently. We are looking at society has changed regarding who cares for the kids. We know there's more and more grandparents and other relatives already stepping up. But from the child welfare aspect, we have so much research to show if we can get kids connected into permanent kinship families when their families can't be restored, we have so much better outcomes. We're looking at redesigning government. We're looking at trying to reduce the governmental intervention, which the kinship permanency incentive program does. And it is a temporary transitional thing, which is what we say we want. We want families to really take care of each other and take care of their own in a lasting, sustaining way.
Catherine, if you lose this benefit, what do you tell the folks that are receiving it now? What other resources do they have?
Well, that's what our navigator and our coordinator are here for. We are fortunate, too, to also have some grant funds that we have researched out and received. It's not much, but we will be able to, you know, possibly help with school supplies or book bags, possibly, you know, if a family is in need of a bed or a dresser or anything, car seats, those types of things. We would be hopefully able to help them in that manner. But, you know, by eliminating that program, it is a financial impact, and we will, you know, have families that, you know, it will be hard for them, but they didn't have it prior to taking these children on, and it won't change their decision with the children.
We talked with Martha Renda earlier. She's a kinship caregiver, and they have three children now, mm-hmm. that they're taking care of, young children. Is that pretty typical?
Very typical, especially here in our county. We have quite a few of our grandparents, aunts and uncles, taking care of young children, and not just one. Typically, two to three children are placed in their home. We also have several teenagers that are living with kinship families here in our county that came to them as teenagers. So we have a variety, but the majority of our families are taking care of young children.
Now, particularly in the cases of multiple children in a family, lots of times you try to keep them together. What are the adoption rates for older children and children in multiples? Yeah, Catherine or Crystal?
Yeah, as far as, you know, adoption for teens.
Outside of kinship.
Outside of mm-hmm. kinship. You know, our teens, a lot of time, are still in the care of Children's Services when they turn 18. Unfortunately, the rate of adoption for older kids is not very high. So being able to find them a permanent home with family and give them that permanency is so important.
Statewide, when we have kids in our custody, we know about 20% go into kin families, exit into their legal custody, where the court has ordered given custody. We have about 15% that go into adoptive families. Most of those successful adoptions are with preschoolers and school-age children. The teens are very difficult to adopt. That's why, as Catherine said, we have too many kids transitioning out of care, and life is very tough for them.
Mm-hmm.
But the average adoption subsidy, the last time I saw, which was about a year ago, was $465 per month. So for three kids, average subsidy would be $1,895 for those three kids. And as you heard Director Colbert say, the state is cutting those adoption subsidy dollars, which is not a share of the pain. It is a direct cost shift to the county agencies.
$20 per.
So it would be an extra $60 that would cost shift down to the county agencies. And much of that would be reimbursed, would receive some support from the federal government.
Catherine, any chance that the Ashtabula County Commissioners would find it, the money somewhere to keep things whole?
I don't believe so, as far as that's concerned. I'm not sure of how their funding is available. We are a levy county.
Oh, okay.
Some of our funds come from levy dollars.
Well, I think that you've asked a great question, Ann, in terms of what is the county responsibility overall. And child welfare is getting hit from all sides in this budget. Our state line item that supports those investigations that Director Colbert talked about and the whole continuum of child welfare is being cut by 10%. It only comprises 5 cents on the dollar for every dollar that's invested in child welfare in the state of Ohio, which is the lowest state investment in the entire nation for child welfare. We are also the local government fund, which supports all sorts of county government, from investment in mental health to the county dog catcher to the local sheriff's department and child welfare. That is getting slashed by half in this budget. The counties like Ashtabula that are fortunate enough to have a local dedicated children's services levy, and only 45 counties do out of 88 counties, those levies are losing value because of a property tax change. So we're getting hit from all sides.
We want to thank Catherine Whittington, Ashtabula. She is the Community Service Coordinator for the Ashtabula County Children's Services. Catherine, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
And also Crystal Ward-Allen, Executive Director of the Public Children's Services Association of Ohio. Crystal, thanks for staying with us today.
Thank you.
And thanks to everybody out there for listening. We'll post, of course, links to the Public Children's Services Association of Ohio. If you want to learn more, you can go there. And otherwise, thanks for listening. This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News.